Today we're going to talk with the widow of a Canadian Army major who was serving in Lebanon in 2006, and together with, he was a UN ceasefire observer, and together with three other UN ceasefire observers, he was the victim of a direct hit from an Israeli airplane. That was August 25th, 2006, and we're going to talk to his wife, Cynthia Hess von Kreutner. I think we may be have already joined by Cynthia Hess von Kreutner. Are you there, Cynthia?
I am.
Well, hey, thank you very much for joining us. This is, of course, a difficult time of year moment for you. It was yesterday, the 25th, was the anniversary, was it not, of the incident?
Yes, it is.
By the way, I should just ask you at the top, where is the major buried?
He's buried in Burlington, Ontario,
mm-hmm.
At the Woodland Cemetery.
Mm-hmm. Just returning to the incident, I was summarizing that, and you can help me with it. On the 25th of July, 2006, your husband was serving with the United Nations Observer Group for Lebanon. I think he was a ceasefire observer,
mm-hmm.
and with a group called Camp Sierra, and they were close to the Lebanese-Israeli border, and a war had been going for 2 weeks, and they were, a lot of fire was coming in close to his, to their position, United Nations Observer position, and there was calling back and forth, and I'm basing myself, by the way, on a report from that time, and after a day of attempted communications, and correct me if I'm wrong, but direct contact with the Israeli Defense Forces saying, please, we have personnel here, be careful where you're firing, and then a day of contact with the Israeli Defense Forces saying that, and then the notification that there was going to be an evacuation of the four UN observers, at that point, on the 25th, a 1,000-pound laser-guided bomb landed on direct hit on their position. Is that right?
Well, I'm going to back up because you're right. It went on for 2 weeks, and daily they were receiving close firing. So it wasn't just one day in which there was close firing. Every day was close firing for them at the post. So they received mm-hmm. that several times, and they weren't the only post that was receiving close firing. So the post in Lebanon were all receiving close firing on a daily basis for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually spoke with Maddie Stanfield, who was at the post during that time, and she described some of it, and it's more terrifying than you think
uh-huh.
As to what was happening. On that particular day, there were 14 aerial bombs and 19 artillery rounds alone on that day.
Yes. Now, yeah, and going through what happened, because it was certainly on that occasion there was considerable press attention. One of the reasons we are happy to be talking to you is that we haven't seen a lot of follow-up, but we're quite interested to know. For example, when this occurred, there was immediate statements from the United Nations, and indeed it was Kofi Annan who said that he didn't think this was an accident, that it seemed to be directed, and he wanted answers.
Mm-hmm.
And the Canadian minister, I forget his post, but Peter McKay, said, well, we can't say anything, we're waiting for details. So what were the details? Did they eventually, were there reports to explain what had occurred there?
Oh, yes, there is. And what I'd like to do is back up to state what exactly happened that day, because I think there's a lot of misconceptions about what happened that day. A lot has not been, you know, out in the media.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right, Kofi Annan basically stated that it was deliberately targeted, as well as myself. We were the two people who said that it was deliberately targeted, and there's reasons for it.
Mm-hmm.
At that point in time, I didn't have all the information, but from what I knew, it was pretty clear that it was. Now that I even know more, it's pretty obvious that it was. But basically that day, what happened is, and a lot of people, and I'll just back up for a minute, a lot of people believe that simply the Israelis flew over, accidentally dropped a bomb on a post, and that's all that happened that day. That's clearly not what happened. This started at 12:11, so from 12:11 to 1:35, for 80 minutes, they received aerial and artillery attack. So that was the first wave of attack. Then there was a second wave of attack, which went from 2:18 to 2:49. So that was for 30 minutes that they were again attacked. So there was a protest made by the UN to the IDF, to the Israelis. And then at 6:29, there were two artillery rounds that impacted the compound itself. So they actually hit the building. And what happened is the bunker doors were damaged, so much so that they could no longer close them. So there was a problem with the bunker doors. So that base was no longer safe. So the chief of OGL requested the IDF to stop firing. And he said, quote, unquote, "Unmoved lives are at risk." And he said, "You are killing my people." Mm-hmm. Very clear. Mm-hmm. So they stated it was no longer safe. They made a decision to evacuate. They wanted to evacuate them the following day, so July 26th at 7 a.m. Mm-hmm. And, you know, often people will wonder, well, why did they wait that long? I question that as well. I'm not a peacekeeper or a military personnel. I'm the wife of. Mm-hmm. And so I'm drawing to best conclusions, and I think they're pretty good as to what happened. There is a network with the UN to the Israelis where they can talk about the situation, try to make things happen. And so my suspicions are they got a hold of the Israelis, said we are going to evacuate them out. In order to do so, they have to be able to get out and go down a road without worry that there's going to be a bombardment by the plane. So the Israelis will state between this time and this time, you can travel down this road and you can get out. Mm-hmm. So that would be my understanding that they were saying, okay, following day at 7 a.m., you can evacuate them out. That's my best suspicions because they don't go into detail in the report as to why they waited so long.
Mm-hmm.
So there were further efforts for them to halt their attack by the force commander himself. Then at 7:30, so from 7:30 to 7:15, there were three close firings at 7:15, 7:16, and 7:17. So for 45 minutes, again, they were attacked, and there were close firings, three of them. They had put together the evacuation plan. The Israelis knew about it. They sent word to the post that they were going to be evacuated at 7:25 and then stated that there would be a radio check at 7:30.
At 7:25 in the evening?
Yes, in the evening, p.m.
Of the 25th.
Of the 25th. So 5 minutes later, at 7:30, when they tried to make contact, there was no contact whatsoever. So then, at 8:10, which is 45 minutes later, they advanced the evacuation timing. And then at 9:55, the Indian battalion went up to rescue them. And when they got up to the post, the gates were locked, and they stated, quote, unquote, almost total destruction of the main building. So it was pretty horrific. That's what they saw when they got there. The first body was found at 10:32, which was Du, the Chinese peacekeeper, and then at 11:20, I believe it was Hans that was next found, who was the Austrian peacekeeper, and then at 1:55, 2 hours later, my husband was found.
Mm-hmm. By the way, that's Major Peter Hess von Kreudner,
yes,
and known to his friends as Wolf, right?
That's right.
Was he always called Wolf, by the way?
He was called Wolf for as long as I knew him. He wasn't always called Wolf. His actual birth name is Peter Hess. He then had his name changed to Peter Hess von Kreudner when he was about 17, 18. It was a request mm-hmm. by his Oma, and then Wolf came about, I guess, in his 30s when mm-hmm. I came on the scene. So
yeah, I want to come back to the what occurred, but I was just to fill in. He was a veteran of. He's 20 years experience. He's a career officer, soldier officer with the infantry.
That's right.
And he had served in Cyprus, Bosnia.
And
the Congo. So he was a veteran. By the way, and I should ask you, this must have been something of concern to you. You experienced these things. How did you feel about that, his having to do these things, that kind of duty?
He's been well-trained. I knew that was part of him, something he wanted to do. I had been to the Middle East myself. Now, I had been there years before, probably at the most peaceful time in the Middle East when you saw Palestinians and Israelis on the checkpoint. It wasn't so difficult to get around Israel. So I hadn't been for a long time, didn't realize the changes that had occurred. And as well, he was serving as a UN personnel. Mm-hmm. And so I wasn't familiar with the hostility.
He had been there for 9 months. There was a unit of four. There was Austrian, a Chinese, and a Finlander there with him and who lost their lives. Had you visited him in Lebanon?
Oh, yes. I had been there in March. And I had visited. I hadn't met any of those guys, unfortunately. But I did meet Maddie and others when I was there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, to go to the point about Peter McKay saying, "Well, we're waiting for the details." The Canadian people were waiting for the details. It's a very curious event. I mean, I'm sorry to use such an odd formulation, but it just doesn't quite add up. I guess I have to ask: did the Israelis ever tell them to abandon that post?
No.
So, you know, because we've had a little bit of a debate here. Some people began saying, well, they shouldn't have been at the post, and it was some kind of mistake. But if one of the parties that you're dealing with as a observer, if they want you to leave, then you would probably leave.
Well, I'd love to address that. And it is addressed in actually the Board of Inquiry. They did take a look at that situation, the UN, and basically they stated in there that no UN post was safer than the other, so they were probably best to remain at that UN post. That was probably the safest place for them to be. In the past, when they had made requests to the Israeli Defense Force to cease and to halt, they had. In this case, they chose not to cease. They continued to do so. And as well, then, if I'm correct in what I'm assuming here, in their evacuation order, the Israelis would have known about this evacuation order. They would have been given them a clearance to leave the following day. So why 40 minutes later did they bomb the post should be the question. They knew that they were there. They know the coordinates. It is a no-fire zone around that installation. They know about it. So in order for them to bomb that post, they would have had to have cleared those coordinates in order to bomb that post.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have some military background myself. I was in the Marine Corps, and I know many people. As a matter of fact, I interviewed a former Canadian peacekeeper, and there are rules of engagement. People don't understand when violence is unleashed by armies. There are certain basic orders of where you will fire, when you will fire, and what type of fire. And this episode reminds me of there was one in 1967. A U.S. ship came under attack during the Israeli-Egyptian war. Did anybody ever account for what their rules of engagements were and how they were? In this case, it's the Israeli, it's their Air Force. How they were to regard a United Nations observer post, which they had been there for a long, long time.
Exactly. That's been my question as well. I want to know the rules of engagement, and that information was not forthright given to us at all. We were not allowed to interview the pilot, anybody involved with this.
The Israelis made a report of some type. Well, what was that? Can you tell us what they said happened?
I can't tell you what the report said because I wasn't allowed to read it. I did see it, though, in the president's hand. It was 6 pages. He said there was really nothing of any validity that we could use towards our examination of what happened that day. However, I did go to Israel. I did meet with the Israeli Defense Force. I met with a colonel regarding what happened. Mm-hmm. And the explanation that I was given is, and it did appear in the media as well, which was, according to him, there had been a battalion below the post. That battalion was taken out, a new one was brought in. They had maps, and they called in the coordinates of all the posts. For some reason, they didn't have the coordinates of that post that they were below, that they could visibly see, for some reason.
The professional military man telling you this.
A colonel, apparently.
A colonel.
Yeah.
Yeah, what did he... At this point, if I was in a courtroom, I'd be watching his body language. That sounds
and I was watching. Trust me, I was watching his body language. It was ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And I hate to use such sharp words, but it's very frustrating. Mm-hmm. He told me that they were being fired upon. I asked him, and by whom? He shrugged his shoulders and looked away. There were no Hezbollah in the area, not one. So, in other words, he's telling me that those peacekeepers who had no guns, nothing, were apparently firing upon him.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't. I can tell you that they weren't doing that.
Well, you know, some terrible mistakes were uttered at the time. I mean, I read the Israeli ambassador to the United Nations. He said, well, this is obviously a matter of UN personnel being caught in the middle of a crossfire, but... You know, a 1,000-pound laser-guided bomb from the air is not a crossfire. Nobody was shooting at that plane that I know of.
That's correct.
So crossfire is the wrong choice of words. Who in Canada made an investigation and a report, and what was their finding?
The Canadian military did an investigation, which I sat in on, and basically they stated that the Israelis, although they... It was very difficult for them to place blame. The blame would go towards the Israeli Defense Force. They are to blame because mm-hmm. it was preventable.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and these various reports, did they confirm that there had indeed been communications? Because, you know, I have the CTV report of July 26, 2006, and they said that there had been calls made to the IDF.
Yes.
Saying you're striking close to us and do something. And by the way, this CTV report says that they were assured that that would stop.
Yes.
I mean, by the way, why have a liaison if it's not going to be a liaison?
Well, it is a liaison. There is a network. They are using it. They quite clearly heard at least over 10 protests that were called into them to say stop. They failed to explain why they didn't follow up on that. And there was also an assurance given by the Prime Minister of Israel, an assurance to the Secretary General that the UN would not be targeted. Now, how good is that? How good is his
that
word?
That was prior to the bomb striking.
That was prior to.
Mm-hmm.
So they were given an assurance that they would not be targeted, but they truly were.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking to Cynthia Hess von Kreutner. She is the widow of Major Peta Hess von Kreutner, sometimes called by all of his good friends, apparently, Wolf, a 20-year veteran of the Canadian Army. He had served in Cyprus, Bosnia, and Congo, and it was a career soldier, killed on the 25th of July, 2006. You had the Canadian report. By the way, are these accessible? Can we tell our listeners they can go and look
yes,
at some of these?
But good luck finding it. Yeah, it's made pretty inaccessible.
Uh-huh.
I have access, and I can certainly email it to you so that your report...
I could post that. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. I will forward that to you, but it is very difficult to get.
Uh-huh. Well, of course, it's an embarrassing situation. Our government is rather close to the government of Israel, and it's for them to take up a negative issue was patently difficult. And probably embarrassing that, but this is one which all Canadians, I'm sure, are concerned about. We have a Highway of Heroes. We mark the death of Canadians killed in, and there's been indeed a renewed emphasis on it. Your husband died in a very serving as Canadian officer with the United Nations, a very important duty. Is there any question? You referred to the Australian major. I know that for her, there was a question of whether she'd been in a war zone. Was there any question of that in regard to your husband?
I didn't need to bring up that issue. Maddie Stanfield needed to in order to receive benefits.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately for me, I did not need to do that.
So you don't actually know. For example, had he been wounded, we don't know whether they would have said that was, we don't, how it would have been defined.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes, we don't know. If they had taken the road that the Australian government did, that would have been pretty
mm-hmm.
bad.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that, because I think for Canadians who want to know more about the work being done there, and again, it was very important work. By the way, that was an extremely dangerous war, and there is talk of perhaps another one, so we need to pay attention to what Canada commits itself to do and what evolves. Australian television, a network, which is abc.net.au/Austory, A-U-S-T-O-R-Y, and it is a story in two parts. It was produced in May 2010 and featured Major Martina Jewell. Now, she was evacuated, not evacuated, she was transferred, as fate would have it, only days, wasn't it, before this happened?
It was 1 week.
1 week before.
Yes.
So the engagements were already going on, and now you have met her. Can you tell us about what did you find in, what did you think of that Australian program? And I'll remind everybody, abc.net.au, and it's Major Martina Jewell. It was very helpful, wasn't it, in terms of getting a picture of what happened?
It was, most definitely. And I guess you're using her married name. I use her maiden name, Maddie Stanfield. But, yes, that's all right, Martina Jewell.
Might be a sensitive matter somewhere.
Yes. I met her prior when I went over to visit with PETA. You know, Maddie made sure she came over and met me, and we got on like wildfire. Mm-hmm. Absolutely love her. And she has been to Canada since. And we've gotten together. I've taken her out to the graveyard as well, and they knew about this program. And then I as well sent all the information that I had to ABC to help out as well, and all information that Maddie would need regarding her difficult situation. I thought the program was very good. They showed the difficulties that the UN faces and what happened at that post.
Yeah, by the way, I just tell our listeners again, please go to that website, abc.net.au/Austory, A-U-S-T-O-R-Y. They will find there photographs of the base camp, which was rather small, and it took a direct hit. The destruction is evident in the photographs, and there's also photographs of your husband, Major Peter Hess von Kreutner, and his colleagues. By her account, these were all brilliant, professional, dedicated individuals. She must have found this extremely difficult.
Yes. She gave me the accounting of what happened to her, and she found out about this in a hospital because she was severely injured, and the suffering and pain that not only Maddie but the surviving team members have gone through is great, and it's hard to deal with that. And I am very open, and I talk to them. I've met her husband, who lived through this. I've also met Tor, who was part of the recovery team and would have replaced my husband. I met with him as well, so he talked to me about what happened after the bombing, about recovering the bodies. He talked to me all about that. I've been talking to a lot of them online as well. Maddie was very good. As I said earlier, she told me how difficult it was weeks before with the bombings that were happening in and around that post.
Well, she had difficulty getting her... Her injuries are a result of having to sort of proceed under fire herself.
What happened is she was trying to get a road into Tyr, from the post. And as I explained, the Israelis gave her a time frame, an opening for her to travel down these roads, and they wouldn't bomb those roads while she was on there. That time frame was, I believe, a matter of a day or so for her to get down there, because often on these roads, they're so damaged she couldn't continue. She'd have to find other routes. She finally had to go far up south and then back down north into Tyre. And when she was coming into the Tyre area, a vehicle quickly pulled out in front of them, a civilian pulled out in front of their vehicle, and they had to slam on the brakes. She went flying and received a back injury. And the things that happened to her afterwards were just terrible, you know, getting into Tyre, to the government house, you know, the inadequacies of the UN to treat that.
Suddenly she discovered it's like with insurance companies. It was like a lot of paperwork. By the way, that I thought Australian television did a brilliant job of telling that story.
And
I was so glad it touched also on the work of your husband and of his colleagues. Now, she received some decorations, can you tell us, has there been, was your husband awarded any particular decoration as a result of this experience?
Yes, there have been a number of them, actually. So he has received the Sacrifice Medal, which I'm quite happy about, because I spoke to a number of dignitaries stating that he needed to receive something because of the commitment and the sacrifice that was made. So that was something that was put together. I was quite pleased about that. He's received the Meritorious Service Cross. That was through Michel Drapeau, who is a lawyer. He nominated him. Excuse me. Other than that, I fear that he may not have received a medal. He also received the Fallen Comrades Award, which is something I'm personally proud of, which happened due to a conversation that I had with Dalton McGuinty. And again, I stated to him that he needed to receive this, and again, it's because of the sacrifice that's made. And so that was put together. That's only been in place since 2006, and that is for police officers, firefighters, and military personnel to receive. And there have been other honors that he has received.
Now, you went. You, by the way, put in quite a bit of effort, and we certainly are supportive of you. I think Canadians would like to know a lot more about this. Is there any ongoing attention to this? Are there other countries, Austria, China, Finland, asking questions? Is this being pursued?
Unfortunately, this is a very difficult situation. The families are in separate countries. It is very difficult for us to come together to be able to do much of anything. I am not an international lawyer. That's what we need. We need somebody who might help in writing of the story. That may be helpful, because this is truly an incredible story to be told.
I think CBC owes us a program like that of done by Australian television.
Yes. However, I will be concerned about the content, because I'm not interested in it being edited. The truth needs to be told. I am tired of wording to protect. It's not working.
Yes. Well, I'm seems to me the United Nations should be pursuing it. They laid the foundation for their case and made rather strong allegations.
Yes.
Cynthia Hess von Kirchner, we're very grateful. I know this is a painful time, and we're so glad you talked to us, and we hope we can talk to you again, and we hope there's progress to get the truth on this matter.
Well, I really want to thank you for your interest, Phil, because this is very difficult. It has, of course, died off. It died off quickly, unfortunately. But yes, absolutely, there are unanswered questions. There are still unresolved issues. Here is my stance, and the Prime Minister's as well, apparently. He wants to make sure that this sort of thing does not happen again, but it has, and that's where I'm very, very upset. When the bombing happened in Gaza, UN personnel were killed. A UN school was bombed, again, apparently by accident. That's my problem. This continues.
Yes.
And again, in other areas, Israel is not held accountable. Israel is allowed to commit any sort of act that they want, war crime or not, and there's absolutely no accountability. This is not working.
I think that's a widely held opinion and with a lot of evidence.
Yes. Well,
thank you very much. And if you'll send us those coordinates, we will post it so that our listeners can see for themselves.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
That is Cynthia Hess von Kreudner. Her husband was Major Peter Hess von Kreudner, infantry officer from Canada, 20 years service, had been in Cyprus, Bosnia, Congo, and was at a post with three other UN officers on July 25, 2006. They were struck with a laser-directed 1,000-pound bomb dropped by an Israeli airplane. And doesn't seem to be adequate interest in the matter in Canada. We're going to take a brief break.